untold. Waiting, wondering is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me out, be the biggest little flirt. Well, I might have... Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. My guest tonight is Alana Brogan from Sonoma State University. Alana, are you with us?
I am.
Hi, how are you tonight?
I'm just fine, thanks.
Very happy
to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
Well, I thought we'd just switch roles here. You know, my listeners may not know, I speak at your class at Sonoma State University a couple times a year. And I just love your students. They're incredibly bright and progressive, and I attribute most of that to your teaching skills.
Well, thank you.
And are you getting a little summer break here, or are you already gearing up for the next season?
We are gearing up. Actually, classes start this coming Friday.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Can you tell I don't have kids? Like, really? Oh, they're already going to school. Now, okay.
That's
I guess
right,
you better be ready,
right.
All right. So tonight you had indicated you wanted to talk about, like, 101 questions about sex that students ask. Is your class just about sex, or is this just one thing that you talk about?
This particular class is all about sex, and we have each semester about 70 young adults in class. They're juniors and seniors, so they're upperclassmen, and generally their age is around 20 years old. And it is a class that we teach from kind of a sociological perspective. My husband teaches it with me, which is great fun because there's the ability for the students to relate to him, the men to relate to him, and the women to relate to me, but then also the women to get a man's perspective, and the same with the male students with me.
Right.
So it's a very fun class. You've been there. The students are eager to learn. They're very attentive. They ask great questions, and they have great...
They do a lot of research. You have them give presentations, so they do, and I notice they really do their homework.
Yeah, they have to do quite a bit of research in terms of bibliographies that I require to show that they've done some evidence-based research. And they do a lot of it on the Internet, which most students do a lot of their research on the Internet these days.
Well, I'm sure this really bums them out, having to search sexual topics out on the Internet.
Yeah.
It must really be a drag.
Yeah, it's a real drag.
So do people fight to get into your class?
They do. We always have a waiting list.
Oh, imagine that.
Yeah, right.
The other teachers are jealous of you, right?
Well,
what's the right word here? Instructor, professor?
Interestingly enough, the number of instructors that want to teach this class are very few.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we teach the class out of the nursing department at Sonoma State. And
right.
There really are only three of us that are comfortable teaching it.
So a lot of fear, huh?
Yeah, a lot of fear and discomfort with the topic of sex. And
well, it's an amazing... Do you think that's a generational thing? Because my mother's, like, in her 60s, and I wanted her to go see my website, sexwithoutshame.com, and
mm-hmm.
She said, well, I just want you to know something. I'll go look at your website, but I don't even say that word. And I was saying, have I been away from home so long I don't even know the people that I come from? Like, when did my mother stop saying the word sex? It was kind of a shock to me.
Well, it's interesting because one of the side things I do to just have fun is I do some passion parties.
Yes.
And so when I'm talking...
we should tell our listeners who haven't had passion... We might have some guys out there who have never been to a passion party. So what is a passion party?
Passion party is a party generally most of the time done with women, but there are parties that are done with men and couples. And it is it's basically selling sex toys, sex powders, you know, edible powders, different creams, lubes, and then vibrators.
And the reason for having them in, this is like a Tupperware party kind of thing, right? Only with sex toys?
Yes. Yes.
And the reason that women in particular like to host these is because they don't necessarily want to go to an adult bookstore, right?
Well, two reasons. They don't want to go to an adult bookstore, and they get lost on the internet looking for what they want. So this is a more intimate way for them to be able to feel in touch some of the different toys and
right.
to decide what's best for them and what they want.
Yeah, plus sometimes when you're surfing on the internet, you don't know what you're going to come across, and then you accidentally get some kind of spyware, and it starts sending you email. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, once you even investigate that, you just are deluged with other sites that find you.
Yes, all the little pop-up windows. It's horrible.
so anyway, I was going
to say... But anyway, yes, I interrupted your story. Passion party, and...
And so when I am approaching people about, you know, do you want to host a party, it's quite interesting the different reactions I get from women, because I'm 61, so women that are in my age group, I more often than not get not something I talk about, I don't have any interest in that, can't think about it, never have been comfortable with it.
Wow.
And then I do get a few that are very interested in it. And the parties I have with women that are more menopausal, actually, are very thought-provoking, asking a lot of questions about what they can do about sex at this time in their life if they don't have any drive or they haven't had sex in their relationship for a while. And younger people are much more open to it, but still have some reservations and can be quite closed down about it. So I when you say the older generation would not be as open to this, I often find that the younger generation isn't either and just has as much reticence talking about it as our baby boomer generation.
Wow. I just want to say one thing, Alana. I had no idea you were in your 60s. I didn't at all. I thought you were in your 50s. So that's a surprise. Anyway, our listeners haven't seen you, but trust me, guys, she looks quite young. So must be all that sex you're having.
Yeah, right. So anyway, the class is, so we have a lot of guest speakers. From all different lifestyles and sexual orientations, because we try to give the students a very broad base from which they can do some critical thinking about where they stand on different issues related to sex. And in the end, however, the class really ends up being about relationship. And we do a lot of talking about relationship. Joe and I kind of are the guest speakers in terms of long-term relationships, because we've been together 30 years, but we have...
Wow, congratulations.
Thanks. So we do classes on class on communication, talk about speaking truths and how to be intimate with one another, not only sexually and physically, but emotionally and mentally.
And I would just... Go ahead.
We like to talk about intimacy as into me see. So how far can you let somebody in?
Oh, so how far are we going to let you see into me, huh?
Uh-huh, into my soul, into my heart, into all of who I am kind of thing.
Very nice. And so the big block for that, of course, is fear.
Right.
And how do you approach?
When we do that class, I have them do a little exercise on what their lies, secrets, and fears are, mm-hmm. and then how they've been hurt. And I have them write that on a little piece of paper and turn it in anonymously. And then at the end of class or the next class, when I've collated all of it, I'll read it back to them. Because usually if you can hear what your lies, secrets, and fears are, if you give them air, it really takes a lot of power away from them. So that's one way I work with them on their fears related to being intimate.
Now, is this a workshop that you teach away from Sonoma State, or is this a class you offer through Sonoma State?
This is like 1 week or 2 weeks of the class. I do this kind of work with them.
At Sonoma State?
Yes, so at Sonoma State, yeah.
Oh, at the college classes that I've been talking to.
Right, yeah. It's part of the curriculum of that class.
Oh, you're kidding. Mm-hmm. That's pretty unusual, isn't it?
I've
been privy to a lot of syllabi, I mean, over the years, because I've spoken at a lot of colleges and universities. I've never seen that kind of, if it's about sex, there's usually this huge separation between matters of the heart and the spirit, and then it just kind of gets into, like, you know, the mechanics.
Well, I know that. I know you are really in tune to that, because it's in your book. A lot of it's in your book. But part of what I do is my husband and I have a business called Integrity Institute, and one of the things I do out of that is relationship retreats. And so I bring some of that to the class.
Very nice.
And so they do get to really kind of look inside themselves, and I give them a book to read by Susan Campbell about truth in dating. Susan Campbell is a therapist here in Santa Rosa, and she's written several different books. But this is a really good book for this class, and they have to kind of delve into some of their fears around how to communicate on a first date as the relationship is going along. How do you break up with somebody? And how do you grieve a relationship? And then they have to write a paper on that, talking about how they applied that to their real life. So they get a lot of different experiences on a deeper level about relationship. And then when we have the guest speakers come and speak, like we have a gay panel that comes and speaks, they end up talking about their relationships. So the class gets to experience a lot about relationship, which is important to me. That's my main goal in teaching it.
So, Alana, are you aware of whether or not there are other professors around the United States that are teaching this type of a sex ed class at the university level?
You know, I don't know. I am not. I'm sure somewhere somebody's giving them some piece of this. Different teachers teach it in different ways. Some are very analytical and just go by a textbook and what's chapter to chapter in the textbook. We at Sonoma State, both teachers, myself and Deborah Kendi, who is another teacher that teaches this, do it from the sociological base. I think that one of the things that I bring to the class is this piece on relationship. That's and the kids love it. You know, they are very into how can we make a better relationship. And even though guys at that age don't necessarily want anything to do with commitment, some of them do, and some of them still want to know how to be in relationship when the time comes.
Right.
So
this is, I think it's revolutionary, but then, you know, I don't know. I'm not a college professor. I've been to a lot of this, you know, that's usually what I get invited to be a guest speaker is the sexuality classes. And I often ask for, please send me the syllabus so I know what they've been exposed to before I get there because, you know, I don't want to, like, be redundant. And I kind of like to know what level they're, you know, operating at. Mm-hmm. I personally have never seen anything about intimacy or truth in dating on that, so I really applaud you. I think it's great that you're doing that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's very fun, and it creates a very meaningful class for everyone. You know, myself, Joe teaching it, and for the students learning it.
So I hope you, I hope some of your students will call in, and if not your students, then maybe we can get some other students, because, you know, we're broadcasting in all over the U.S. for anybody who has internet access, but being located in the Chico area, obviously, that's a huge, huge student population there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not every day that you get to ask a specialist in the area of sex questions on the air. So certainly hoping that people will call in. Maybe you told some of your students about this. I hope so.
I did. I emailed my class from last semester and my class that's going to be starting on Friday, hoping. So I hope if you're out there listening that you will call in, ask some questions.
What kind of questions do you think they might ask you, since you filled these questions all the time?
Well, actually, we're working on a book called 101 Questions that students have about sex, and because we think that it would be an interesting book because for parents, number one, to know what their kids are curious about at this age, and then for students that may not be able to take advantage of this class to be able to get the answers to some of these questions. We do an exercise at the beginning of the school year called Mystery of the Other, and we break the students into two different groups of the guys and the women. And Joe takes the guys, and they go and populate a set of questions, and then I populate a set of questions with the women. And the questions are, what have you always wanted to ask men that you haven't felt comfortable asking? And the opposite for the men to ask the women. And so I thought I would go over some of those questions with you, because these are the kinds of questions that typically get asked and would be in our book as well. And the other interesting thing is that, before I give you some of the questions, is that the guys frequently come back with three-dimensional questions, and the women often come back with two-dimensional questions, and you would think it would be just the opposite.
It's counterintuitive for me.
So, for instance, the girls might ask a question like, why do you push my head down when we're having oral sex? I don't like that. A guy might ask a question, and generally do ask the question, you ask me to tell you what I'm thinking about something, and you ask me to tell you the truth, and then when I do, you get all upset and start crying and don't talk to me or get angry. So what's that about?
Wow. This, you know, I'm with the girls. I want to know the answer to that first question. What's the hand on the back of the head thing about? Who told you to do that?
Well, I can tell you, and for all your listeners, 100%, women do not like that.
Yes, absolutely. It's pretty damn horrible. What do the guys usually say in response? What's their answer for that?
They're just excited and, you know, wanting to get on with the process and get their blowjob. And, you know, so it's like trying to control the situation and make the woman suck, I guess, the way they want to be sucked. And I don't think they realize how demeaning it feels to the women. And it's always kind of a surprise to the men about why that's a big deal.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, that's disappointing. Yeah, it's funny. It's been a long time since I've been in college. For some reason, I was kind of thinking, oh, it's 2008. Surely guys aren't still doing that.
But they're still doing it.
It's
surprising how all the questions are still pretty much the same.
Isn't that something? Speaking of questions, let me just check in with our listeners here. This is a live call-in show, and we have with us tonight Alana Brogan from Sonoma State University. She teaches sex to college students, and if you have any questions as a parent or a college co-ed or just somebody else, feel free to call in. Our call-in number, toll-free in the United States, is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. And if you are calling from Canada, you can reach us toll-free at 888-815-9756. Once again, that number is 888-815-9756. Please give us a call, and Alana will be happy to tell you whatever it is you want to know about sex. So this is interesting. Is there, like, that would be, like, the number one question from the girls and the number one question from the boys? Is there, like,
no,
a number
I wouldn't
two?
I wouldn't say number one. But they're always, those two questions are always on the list.
Wow. And what else? Give us another one.
Okay. So one of the questions the guys always want to know about the woman is, have you faked an orgasm?
Oh, that's their ego there.
And one of the things we do when we're having them respond to these questions often is a question will come up where it just kind of demands people raising their hands if they've done this or not done this. And so there is not one woman in the room that doesn't raise their hand.
I'd say that she's faked an orgasm.
Yeah.
Ah, shame on them! You know what? I always took it. Never fake an orgasm for free. I mean, give me a break. Unless somebody's paying you to be an actress, you should be reporting the truth. I don't get it. What's in it for a girl to fake an orgasm? By the way, I've never done that unless I was getting paid. So I just don't get it. Why do girls do it?
They do it because they're tired and they want to hurry up and they want to finish what's going on.
Oh, interesting. I guess I always enjoyed sex too much. I was kind of like, you really stink, so work harder. Did it dawn on them they might be able to have a good time if they told the guy what to do?
Well, that's one of the things we try to teach them. But one of the things that I do, because there was a time in my life where I did fake orgasms in my first marriage, and I did in my second marriage for a certain period of time, and it had to do with my, you know, insecurities that I had to work through, and but when I met Joe and I did fake some orgasms with him, I think the important thing to know is that I loved having sex. We were like rabbits having sex, and
right.
We loved it. And the fact that I couldn't have an orgasm at that particular time in my life,
yeah,
or faked it, didn't mean that I didn't love the sex.
Okay.
And I think women get really confused behind that. And I know when I talk about that in class, the women kind of nod their heads and they get it, you know, because
right.
They have periods where, you know, they may be having more orgasms or less orgasms or whatever. And it's never about not loving the sex. Love the sex. You know, I guess the message there is orgasm isn't the whole thing about sex.
It's not. If you get into Tantra, of course, often there's quite a bit of effort exerted to avoid orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
I had a tantric experience last summer. I had this amazing thing. I guess they call it a kriya, and it lasted for a month. It was
oh my
so
gosh.
Beautiful. It was so It was so beautiful and so sweet, I didn't want to ruin it with an orgasm.
Uh-huh.
So, I didn't touch myself for a whole month. Huh?
They sometimes refer to that as ingasm, but they called it a kriya, huh?
Well, it's a spontaneous muscular contraction that usually comes
right.
out of a conscious breathing technique.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it happens to yogis who are just meditating, not in a sexual way, but it's also pretty common in Tantra.
Yeah.
And in my case, I'd had a 3-day extended Tantric experience with a lover that led to this 30 days of Tantric bliss that was just so beautiful. I didn't want to ruin it with an orgasm, and I never thought I'd hear myself say that.
Yeah.
Because I love orgasms. But
they're pretty wonderful.
It was just being, so definitely there are many different ways to enjoy sex. But that's interesting that, you feel like the women aren't just trying to hurry up and get it over. Some of them are trying to hurry up and get it over with, but some of them are having a good time and don't want to disappoint the guy by trying to explain to him that I enjoy the sex even though I'm not having an orgasm.
Right, because they're too embarrassed behind it because, society says if you're not having an orgasm, then you're not having sex and there's something wrong with you.
Right, you must be frigid.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Would you say that's like a predominant theme with both genders, is all this fear of not being good enough?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely.
How does it come up for the guys?
One of the questions they'll ask the girls is, does penis size matter?
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty typical. And the girls' response is always, the length doesn't matter, the girth matters.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So that's pretty universal response?
Yes.
Huh?
Yeah, definitely.
Wow. I don't know. My mother always said it's not the meat, it's the motion. I kind of feel that way too. I mean, you're gonna have 12 inches, but if you don't know what you're doing with it, it's not doing me much good. And there's some girls
true.
Out there who really know how to rock my world, and they don't have a penis at all. So, but the guys are really insecure about that since they're just completely inundated with Cialis and Viagra. Advertisements.
Well, yeah, definitely. And guys in the age group that I'm teaching don't really need that, and I don't know of many that use it because, it's pretty easy for them to have a heart on at that age. All they have to do is blink.
True enough. However, I have to say that I am aware of kind of. Well, I don't know if they would be, you're teaching students that are 20. That might be a little bit early, but by the time they're 25, 25 to 30, right in there,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
oftentimes experimenting with it as a, kind of like a drug. If this is good, then more would be better.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. It's actually, believe it or not, become... I don't know if I want to say a designer drug, but anyway, it's an experimental drug for young men who have no erection problems at all.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that. And what do they say it does for them?
Well, I'm not actually just doing the rumor mill here. It's personal experience from having dated younger men. It's kind of... It's like, we've got extreme sports nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough to do whatever, reach whatever highs were reached before. Now we got to use testosterone to try to be the best baseball player ever.
Right.
That kind of mentality. So somebody who has, you know, a perfectly wonderful cock, it wants to get another inch out of it.
Hmm.
Yeah. And it can work in that direction, but personally, I think it's really sad.
Yeah.
I do, because, I mean, again, we've got this focus so much on something that's such a small part of sex, because sex is so much about energy and connection. But
well,
anyway.
So, one of the things the guys always want to know, which is pointing to their insecurities, is why, you know, how good looking do I have to be? Why do girls always go for the bad boys?
What's the answer about the good looking thing? And have you noticed a trend over the last few years? Has that answer from the girls changed?
Well, no. And the girls ask this question too. You know, what makes a 10, or what features are most important to you, or whatever.
Yeah.
And both of them pretty much answer the same way, and it does. It's not too big of a surprise. I mean, they say it depends. It's all about the person as a whole, and not everybody has to be a Brad Pitt or whoever your 10 is.
Angelina Jolie, probably.
Yeah. So they seem very honest about that, that the woman doesn't have to be Angelina Jolie and the guy doesn't have to be Brad Pitt or a stand-in for Brad Pitt. So I think that they are genuine about that. However, the guys say, well, then how come you guys always go with the bad boys? And I'm sure that means, you know, guys that are more aggressive, more assertive, tend to
maybe rude to the girl.
Yeah, tend to get into a little mischief, aren't nice to the girl. Yeah, maybe verbally abusive.
Right.
Play around on them, kind of thing. And the girls generally answer that. They get a little sheepish about it, and of course not all girls are doing that, but the ones that are say, you know, because it's exciting, because we want to try it out, but in the end they'll always respond with, the person that I would want to be in a long-term relationship with, you know, has to be funny and likes to do a variety of things, you know, whatever they actually
right.
have on their mind.
Yes, and if somebody would be a little more responsible.
Yeah, and it isn't necessarily about good looks.
You know, just a little side note here, that recently the scientists discovered that a couple of different species of birds have a situation where the female mates with the responsible bird, the responsible male bird. That's the guy who shows up to build the nest.
Oh, really?
Yes. And
that's
he's
nice.
The one that's going to help raise her babies. He may take turns sitting on those eggs, or he may bring her food while she's sitting on the eggs, and he's definitely going to help feed the babies. So that's the male bird that the female bird selects to do a nest with. But when he's not looking, she will go out and have sex with the bad birds.
And come back
to this nest. This other bird worked so hard to build with her and lay his eggs. So there's actually some precedence in nature for this thing, this phenomenon
yes.
of women chasing after bad boys.
I like it. So this is another fun thing. Usually in somewhere in the class, usually actually on the first day, we have them get up and answer questions that we've posted around the room. And so this is one of the questions that's always fun. What questions do you have for your parents about their sexual relationship? And so some of the questions are, how often do you have sex? Do you still get it? Do you have the urge to cheat? I love this one. Do you have sex in my room?
Oh, God.
Is that one asked
very often?
What?
Do you have sex in my room? Is that one that is asked?
Actually, that comes up almost every semester.
No way.
Yeah. Is it the best?
Wow. Okay. Go ahead.
Is it the best sex ever? Is mom a moaner? Where's the weirdest place you've done it?
Wow.
How many previous partners have you had? Do you ever think about swapping?
They are way more curious about this than I thought they would be.
Do you role play? Do you do anal?
Oh, my God.
What's your favorite position? Do you do sex with your shoes on, with the lights on or off?
Oh, my God.
How long were you dating Dad before you had sex? And how long were you dating before you, that's a redundant thing. But anyway, fun questions.
They're absolutely delightful questions. What do you tell them? Do you tell them to go home and ask their parents this, or do you try to fill in as a proxy for their parents and answer some of those questions?
We have them on the first day of class write questions that they've always wanted answered about sex.
Yeah.
And then we go through the whole semester, and then on the last day of class, we look at that set of questions and see, so what hasn't been answered. And then we always pull this parents thing out, too, and we answer them from our perspective. And, you know, of course, tell them that our perspective is not necessarily your parents, so can't tell you for sure. But, if they're adventurous in sex at all, they've probably had sex in your room.
So you give them a perspective of an older generation than so that they get some sense of the fact that sex is forever. It's not just for the young.
Right.
That's, wow. Again, I really think you're doing something unique there.
Well, I think this parental piece is definitely unique. I bet there's not a lot of that going on in other classes. I mean, one of the things I think that Joe and I bring is tremendous openness. I mean, I don't have any problem talking about any part of my sex life and where we've been and what's happened with it. And I think the kids always tell us at the end of class that they have appreciated us being so open and easy to talk to about their sex life. They don't hold back on the questions.
No, what I really appreciate about the tone that you set by being so open, and you yourself are a wonderful example of a woman who is shame-free. When I walk into your classroom to speak to your students, I am met with much warmer reception than what I'm used to at most colleges and universities. There's an attitude that sex is normal, as opposed to that it's something that we all have to giggle and joke about and then try to embarrass each other over.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the reasons that I love fielding their questions, too, because their questions are usually honest and constructive, you know. Sometimes when I go to other universities, I will get questions that are meant to degrade, embarrass, and taunt.
Mm.
So, you know, because they're still coming from the old paradigm, which is that sex is dirty. And anybody who talks about it is, you know. Yeah. So you're definitely, I would love to see you take this further out into, we need more of this. Like, you know, maybe you could start teaching the teachers how to teach sex ed. Have you thought about that? Probably have, since you're writing a book, huh?
I haven't really thought about teaching the teachers, but yes, about sharing some of our learnings definitely through this book. And I do have, I do retreats. I'm doing one on December 6th coming up. And it's called
Intimate. And where is that going to be?
It's going to be in Pacifica, California.
Okay.
It's called Intimacy and Sexuality. This one is a workshop for women. And
any particular age group?
No, any age group. We've done it before and had people from ages in their young 20s to 75, 80 years old. And I do this with another woman by the name of Linda Bloom, who is a psychotherapist and has written, she and her husband are quite famous in terms of taking really difficult relationships and helping people move through some very hard processes to be able to save their relationship. And they do a lot of teaching at Esalen and have written a book called 101 Things I Wish I Knew When I Got Married. So she'll be co-facilitating it with me. And it is, as I said, it's in Pacifica. And if you want anybody out there that would want more information on it, you can email me at abrogan, A-B-R-O-G-A-N, at sbcglobal.net.
And is there a website they can check out too? Or
actually, my website is www.integrityinstitute.net. But this particular retreat isn't on it yet.
Okay. Well, they can check out the other stuff.
But my email would be on the website, too, so you could always email me from there.
abrogan@sbcglobal.net.
Yeah.
Just a reminder to our listeners, this is we're live, and if you have some questions for Alana and want to get answers to your questions about sex as a parent, as a college student, or anybody else, it's absolutely free. Dial in toll-free for the U.S. at 877-876-5227. That number again is 877-876-5227. Or in Canada, toll-free is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. So, Alana, tell me a little more about this book. Are you also co-writing this with Linda, or is this just something that you and your husband Joe are doing?
Just my husband and I, Joe.
And Joe, okay. How far along are you?
We've got the basic outline done, and we have all the questions that we're going to use. And so it's just now sitting down and answering the questions.
And are you using quotes from the students?
To some extent, yeah. More paraphrasing than quotes.
Oh, okay. So you haven't had to get permissions, but... So are your students excited about the fact that you're working on this and that it's coming out of the class?
Yes, they are. They like the idea a lot.
I would imagine.
And we'll ask, you know, how it's coming along and, you know, are you going to use any of these questions that, you know, they came up with in a particular class?
Right. So and I wonder, college is different than high school, but do you ever hear from parents? Do they ever contact you and ask questions about what their kids are learning, or do you get feedback from parents at all?
No, not at all, which I guess I'm just as happy about. But
yeah, because it could not, you know, depending on what generation they're from, it might not be positive, huh?
I do. One of the things we do hear from kids, though, is, and I think this is really important if any parents are listening, we do a class on STDs, and it's a pretty frank, straightforward class on STDs, and it's a little bit frightening for them. One thing they always say is, I wish we knew this information a lot earlier than what we're getting it now. The whatever sex education they get in high school is pretty whitewashed, and, you know, they're out there having sex, and so some of them, when they get to class, already have some of these STDs. And it's very psychologically upsetting for them to know, you know, that they already have this, and then to hear about it in class, it kind of upsets them again and more.
Yeah.
And a few of them end up dropping out of class because of that.
Wow.
You know, just one or two over the last several years. But I would make a plea to parents to really be more frank with your children about what goes on with STDs and the idea of wearing condoms and how STDs are passed on and so easily passed on, so that they have more information to work with when they're out there experimenting. I mean, a lot of students these days are having sex, anal sex, thinking that, you know, they can't get pregnant from that and, you know, nothing's going to happen. Well, in fact, they can get pregnant from that if the sperm hit in the perineum anywhere, and they can get up to the vagina. So, and also anal sex doesn't protect against STDs.
As a matter of fact, it's the most effective way of transmitting an STD, short of sticking it in the hypodermic needle and sticking it in your veins, because the rectum sucks up things. That's what its job is,
right,
to absorb things into little capillaries and put it in the bloodstream as quickly and efficiently as possible.
So
you can't have anal sex. Huh?
And so, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have interrupted you. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you can't have anal sex without creating little tears into the rectum,
right,
which even makes,
right,
it just that much more effective at putting things straight into your bloodstream.
Right. And if it's not that, then they're doing oral sex and thinking that there's no possibility of STDs with that. And regular condoms are much more well-known, and kids have more information about that than they do oral dams. So very, very, very few use the oral condoms. And or know anything about them.
No, most of the audiences I've talked to, I'm surprised, because if it's in San Francisco, a lot of people know what a dental dam is, because, you know, it's a fairly thriving lesbian and gay community, which has tended to normalize that term, and it seems like a lot of straight people have even heard of it. But I get outside of San Francisco, and most people just look at me like, a dental what?
Mm-hmm.
A dental dam. It's a piece of latex. It's a square piece of latex that you use to put over a woman's vulva if you want to perform cunnilingus without the risk of catching something. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think one of the things, unfortunately, the religious right, which gained so much political power in the last 8 years, had, you know, what did their best to re-educate the new, you know, crop of kids to believe that condoms were completely inefficient. And they really focused on the idea that they're only 97% accurate or whatever, which I just think is such a sad thing, because a lot of kids just gave up using condoms altogether.
Yeah.
They didn't even bother.
And because they're not getting enough critical education about STDs, they just do not get how important they are. I mean, I would say the majority of kids that come into that class, it's about comfort, you know. So the guys say, well, you can't feel as much with a condom on.
Right.
And that's their main excuse for not using one.
Which is so sad, because this is another thing. I just wish that the schools could bring in sex workers to teach safer sex, because, you know, anybody who's ever made their living through sex knows how to use a condom, not just properly, but erotically. Because you can't bring back business over and over and over again unless you know what you're doing. And, you know, the box or the carton that those condoms come in it does such an inadequate job of teaching you how to have fun with a condom, how to make it hot. And, you know, there are lots of ways to make the usage of a condom very hot. But, you know, if there's a taboo against sex, we've got an even bigger taboo against pleasure.
Yes. Isn't that a bloody shame, too?
Yes, it is. I mean, look what happened to Jocelyn Elder. She lost her job for talking about masturbation. The former Surgeon General of the United States. I just think, wow, what would it look like if kids really did learn about masturbation and tantric sex? They wouldn't even have to run the risk of STDs in pregnancy. They could just be having fun.
Yes, definitely.
Oh, no, let's not do that.
Right. Well, and when you talk about masturbation, too, you know, that's another thing. And the class that I always ask the women, you know, how many of you are masturbating? And a good portion of them are. But there's I would say a third of the class that has not done that. So I always talk to them about how important it is to learn their body by doing that and to know what they like and don't like. Because, again, in communicating, and when we talk about communication, so often it's about being able to talk to your partner about what you like and what you don't like. In sex.
So a third of the 20-year-olds in your classroom a third of the female 20-year-olds in your classroom have not masturbated.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary.
Yeah.
At least not that they know of. Did you hear about that research recently of a female fetus that masturbated to orgasm inside the womb?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I've got to get that reference. I just read that like 3 weeks ago, and I was just like blown away. I was like, wow. And they were like, well, how do you know that the fetus had an orgasm? And I was like, because, you know, it had these involuntary muscular contractions after its hand was down in its vulva region.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, if you thought you were going to teach your kids to not masturbate, you're too late.
Yeah, really. Well, I think, again, that's a really important piece, and one I also cover in class, and that's how do you talk to your kids about sex, because so many parents, when they see children playing with themselves and masturbating or whatever, just, you know, yank their hand away, and they get the message that, you know, there's something wrong with that. And the same thing if they start staring at their parents' naked body in a funny way, you know, all of a sudden then it's, let's cover everything up. We can't do that anymore. And
right.
Certainly you have to use good judgment behind that. But to give messages to kids that, you know, touching themselves in their genital area is a bad thing is part of how we start growing up with hang-ups around sex.
Right. Well, it's the very, very roots of sexual shame, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have children?
I do. I have two daughters.
And I'm assuming that you raised them real sex positive.
Yes.
And how did they turn out?
Well, I know they both enjoy sex, but it's interesting, for as open as I have been with them all my life, they when I start talking to them about sex, they'll go, oh, Mom, you know.
How old are they?
36 and 34.
36, 34, so they're Gen X, huh?
Yeah.
You know what's so funny? I'm sure you've seen some, I remember the Meet the Folks with Ben Stiller and Dustin Hoffman and Barbara Streisand. And it's so funny because Barbara Streisand and Dustin Hoffman are playing the baby boomer parents who are totally sex positive. And the kids are, the Gen X kids, you know, who are in their early 30s, are so embarrassed that their parents talk
mm-hmm.
about sex.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, there's always a little bit of a backlash from generation to generation, you know. don't want to be like their parents. But I'll bet, you know, whether they, even if they are embarrassed, I bet they have no idea how lucky they are to be having a healthy relationship with their own sexuality.
Well, and I know that they like it. As much as it embarrasses them when I'm face-to-face with them talking about it, I know they go to their friends and say, hey, my mom's doing this. My mom's teaching a sex class, you know, whatever, because I hear back from their friends.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good. That's
yeah.
the kind of feedback you want as a parent.
So I thought I would
bragging about you behind your back.
I thought I would end up with this question that we ask the kids to give us answers to, and that is, how can people lighten up about sex? And some of their answers are, get educated, more information when you're younger, talk about it, discuss it, that parents would be more open about it, get experience, get more positive exposure, stay open-minded, ask more questions, be comfortable with yourself, and just do it.
Just do it. That's a Nike advertisement, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
But make sure you know what you're doing so you do it safe.
Yeah, right.
Well
they did, one of their answers, I didn't give it to you, but it pertains to that. It says make testing, which means testing for STDs, more available and comfortable.
And not so shame-based, I think.
Yeah.
It probably would make it more comfortable, right?
Mm, definitely.
Yeah. Alana, I'm so proud of you and all the work you're doing. And why don't we give them your email address one more time so people can contact you.
Okay.
Before we sign off here tonight.
A. Brogan, that's A-B-R-O-G-A-N, at sbcglobal.net.
Awesome.
And
thank
I'd love
so
to hear from you. Hear from you all.
Yes, hear from all the listeners. And I'm going to see you November 21st, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah,
talking,
me too.
Talking to another crop of your wonderful students. when's that conference again that you're teaching in Pacifica?
It's December 6th.
December 6th.
And it's all day, you know, from about 9 to 5. Actually, yeah, 9 to 5. And it's 450 Dondi Way, number 13, Pacifica, California, D-O-N-D-E-E. So, and you can email me to get more information.
Okay, great. All right. Thanks so much for joining me tonight. I will talk to you soon and keep doing that, shifting those paradigms and getting rid of sexual shame.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Veronica, very much for having me on.
Good night, Alana.
Good night.
Veronica Monet offers help, healing, and hope in the form of private telephone sessions. Email Veronica at sexwithoutshame.com to schedule an appointment, or visit www.sexwithoutshame.com to find out what Veronica can do for you.